Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend, the co-host of the Real Blend podcast, here to introduce you to a new episode of Real Blend, a bonus interview that we have with you guys with a returning guest and somebody who is very special to the show, director Zack Snyder, who's going to be talking about his director's cuts of the two Rebel Moon films that are coming to Netflix. These are going to be made available on August 2nd. And if you've been paying attention to Zack's schedule at all this year, you will know that he had two theatrical cuts, quote unquote theatrical cuts, of the movies Rebel Moon Part 1 and Part 2 that came out earlier this year. They were the PG-13 versions of his interpretation of this rich sci-fi world that he is building or has built and is going to continue to build. But now he has these much longer and far more fulfilling director's cuts of Rebel Moon Part 1 and 2. And similar to, as we discussed in this interview, similar to the way that like Batman versus Superman Ultimate Edition is the more complete version of that story, where there's more character development, there's better plot development. There are elements of the stories that are left out of the theatrical cut or the shorter versions, the more commercial versions. This is the version of Rebel Moon that I think Zack has been waiting for people to get a chance to see. And so with those director's cuts coming to Netflix, he wanted to come back around onto Real Blend, talk to us about his decisions to have a more commercially viable version of Rebel Moon available to consumers. You can tell that going into these director's cuts, they are the R-rated version. And he even talks about some of the things that he had to cut out to avoid a potential NC-17 rating. And then as Jake was talking to him about, like, how the streamers are concerned about ratings like this and the duration of runtime and all this stuff is really important, but still getting the most Zack Snyder that he could put into these films, which again, to me, are the superior version of the take of the story that he's trying to tell. So Rebel Moon Part 1 and 2, the director's cuts, are coming to Netflix. They should be available momentarily for you guys if they're not there right now. And in the meantime, while you're waiting, please listen to our full interview with director Zack Snyder on behalf of his director's cuts of Rebel Moon Part 1 and 2.
Thank you so much for coming back, man. We always love having you on. It's always a massive honor for us. We appreciate you.
Well, it's my honor myself, so thank you guys.
So I'm going to start out with it. It's not a very sexy question, but I figure we'll get the meat and potatoes question out of the way before we get into the fun stuff. You know, so many of your director's cuts are for many reasons, the result of circumstances beyond your control. But when it comes to Netflix, they don't have to worry about box office. So runtime doesn't matter. And for some people, would say a rating doesn't matter. I'm sort of curious, what were the conversations that yielded a director's cut in the first place? Because we don't often think of a streamer as a place where a director's cut is even necessary.
Well, there was like conversation around the rating and the runtime where they felt like we could make a slightly more commercial version of this movie if we kept the rating to PG-13 and the runtime to like right around 2 hours. Hmm. So that was like a conversation that we just felt like they felt like based on their data that would be more viewable. And so I was like, okay.
So
that was part of the negotiation. Like I had written definitely an R-rated movie. And so it was a conversation like, hey, if we say yes, is there a PG-13 version of this movie? And I was like, absolutely. You know, and then I think that's where the whole, we were in a negotiation and And we came up with this idea of like doing, having these director's cuts in addition to the PG-13, because like, you know, I absolutely felt like the movie that I wrote and the movie that I wanted to make, of course, is this longer R-rated movie that you'll see.
So streamers do worry, you know, maybe not in a way that a theatrical studio does, but just streamers do worry about those things.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. Zach, so to me, it's akin to BVS Ultimate Edition in that when you now watch these longer cuts, a lot of the stuff that gets put back in is rich character development. And not only that, but like really strong performances. So I wanted to kind of know two different things. One, which character or actor do you think kind of benefits the most from these longer cuts? And also, how do you have a conversation with certain actors who maybe know that they gave something really great, but people might not get to see it right off the bat? Like, just be patient. Just wait. We're going to get it back in. You're going to see a longer version of your arc.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think I was upfront with everybody about what would be in the PG-13 and what would be in the R-rated, although it's impossible, like, you know, for the actors to keep track of everything. So
sure.
I think that, you know, a few of them, I don't think have seen it yet, the R-rated version. So, you know, like for instance, Sky's character is hugely benefited by the R-rated. Have you guys seen it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Sky's character is hugely benefited by the R-rated versions, and the relationship between, him and the young girl there is hugely benefited by it.
100%. Yeah. I got so much more into their journey with Jimmy as well too.
Is Anthony Hopkins someone that you explain the concept of the director's cut to, or is that not a conversation that ever comes up?
I mean, a little bit. I would say that there was a much bigger, a huger part for him. You'd see more character development of Jimmy, and there, you know, we recorded additional stuff that way. You know, with him, you know, obviously, you know, there's a bunch of many additional scenes, so it's just it was just a question of whether or not because it's a pretty weird little piece of minutia around like director's cuts, theatrical cuts, streaming. You know, it's hard. I think it's hard for everyone to wrap their heads around. But trying to explain it to him was like a big, it was a bit of a tricky thing, but he was fine. It was fun.
He's a pro. I don't know why we don't talk about his voice in the way that we talk about like Morgan Freeman's voice. Like I genuinely think he's got one of the greatest voices of all time. It's incredible. This is a bit of a nerdy question.
Charlotte's character and Sky's character. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know you had pitched this idea to Lucasfilm originally as a Star Wars movie. I'd love to know how you had originally envisioned fitting this story into a galaxy far, far away. And also, I would just love to know like how that meeting went. Like, what is it like to pitch a Star Wars movie at Lucasfilm?
It was with Kathleen Kennedy, and it was, you know, pretty, you know, in those days, you know, before the sale, there was a moment in time when Star Wars was in this weird place, you know, and I felt like, you know, my story was very much about, it was really like a fan fiction film, really, in a lot of ways, you know, and the fact that I really wanted it to be rated R, and I didn't want any, like, you know, reoccurring characters from canon. You know, there's a bunch of things I wanted to do, you know, that were very specific, which, you know, I feel like in retrospect sort of fits in some ways into kind of what they've done and some ways not. But, you know, it was fun. I mean, I, you know, for me, I'm a big Star Wars fan. So I thought it was great.
Do you think we'll ever get an R-rated Star Wars movie?
I don't know. It's an interesting question, you know. I mean, like, well, you know, you look at what happened, you know, with Deadpool, and maybe, I mean, you know, like, it's hard to say.
Oh, no, they're going to try to force everything into R-rated versions now. Yeah. Certain things don't fit in that box necessarily. I don't think everything has to sort of go.
I mean, like, you know, my Star Wars movie would have just, it was, the reason why I wanted to do it as sort of its own thing, one-off universe, was for that exact reason, that I felt like an R-rated Star Wars was a fetish concept that didn't really, was an outlier and didn't really belong, you know, frankly, within the continuity of Star Wars. But I still felt like there would be, you know, for people that grew up on Star Wars and whose aesthetic evolved, would still, there would still be a market for that universe.
Zach, two other references or influences I think that the DNA is sprinkled throughout both of the Rebel Moon films. One is Sir Ridley Scott. I just want to talk about his influence on you and your visualizations of other worlds. Especially, I was lucky enough to come to the set of this and to see your storyboards for the different planets that the Corps was going to be stopping at to recruit people. It always felt like we were stepping into, you know, a completely different chapter of a much larger book. And then, you know, the heavy metal magazines as well, too, which are obviously influential on you in the design of the characters and the worlds. Can you just talk about those influences and how?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Ridley's, you know, obviously, you know, I grew up on all of his movies, and, you know, just an incredible visual storyteller that I've always had a huge admiration for. So, you know, there, I think that is what it is. As far as heavy metal goes, absolutely. The heavy metal aesthetic is really at the core of this entire thing. You know, it was really, for me, the entire exercise was making a live action heavy metal movie. You know, that's really that was the thesis of my approach to it, and what I've been wanting to do my entire career as far as visualizing this like sci-fi universe in that context. So that heavy metal was a huge influence, and that's really goes to sort of, and I mean, I think you really see it in the director's cuts much more than I think in the PG-13.
Sure.
Just the way the sex and the violence and just everything is kind of, and the sort of, I think the director's cuts have a slightly more exotic quality about them, you know, in every way, you know, and a more indulgent, you know, in every way. And I think that that's what I really, and I think that that's kind of what heavy metal is in a lot of ways. It always, the thing that you think is going to happen, they go all the way with it. And I think
But it never struck me as like violence for violence's sake. It's always story driven. It's always character driven.
And Rebel Moon is 100% that way as well. You know,
All of your movies are, all of any piece of violence I can think of, in whether it be 300 or Watchmen, it's any piece of violence I could point at and go, well, here's why that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, absolutely. I don't, you know, I always believe that action sequences in the movies are character pieces as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're learning about the character through the action.
Yeah. Netflix had reported, and this is just the stat that I read in my homework, that in the first 10 days of this, of the original cut being released, 60 million views, which is an insane number. You've had massive box office openings. You've had $100 million plus box office openings. Do the two compare at all? Like, is there a difference between, as a filmmaker, what it feels like to open a movie to $150 million versus 60 million people pressed play on my movie in 10 days? Are those two different feelings, or are they kind of one and the same?
Yeah, I think it's different because I think that for whatever reason, we don't have that pop culture, streamers don't have that pop culture hit that box office does. Because I just think culturally, we think of the box office as it just has more weight, you know, in mass culture, you know, like, you know.
It's a tangible thing to be able to say this number, we hold this number in our hand.
Yeah. And I think that like 60 million views, which is, you know, an insane, like would be an insane box office. That's like $160 million opening, maybe more. That's based on $10. Like, I don't know who's paying $10 to go to the movie.
I would say in Chicago, it's a lot more than that, man.
Yeah. So, you know, it probably closer to $180 million. Which would be, if that happened in the theater, would be literally a seismic like box office event. It would literally have like reshaped the landscape of movies. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I think That doesn't, you know, that does, I mean, like, look, you know, what are they like? Army of the Dead is like past, you know, 150 million views, you know, that's, you know, you can't like, that's like an insane, insane amount of.
It's top 10 Netflix movies of all time, isn't it?
Yeah. I in top 15, I think, but it's, yeah. But anyway, 150 million views is just from a box office standpoint is unbelievable. Like would mm-hmm. be crazy. Would be a crazy success.
Yeah.
But you know, I think in weirdly in the streaming world, you're just like, okay, no, that's cool.
Yeah, on to the next thing. But Zach, you keep pulling yourself back into that world. It feels like you firmly have a foot planted in each of the worlds. It feels like you want to keep going with you have Rebel Moon storytelling that you want to continue. You've talked about the 6-part podcast that you want to keep doing. I've heard you say that you want to go back to the Army of the Dead and sort of capitalize on those stories. Which one is taking your attention at the time? Which one are you juggling?
Well, right
both?
Now, I mean, I'm developing, you know, weirdly, we're trying to do like a small movie right now. I'm not going to say what it is, but like, I just was like, can I just do a movie without any visual effects in it for like 5 minutes? And then we get back to the insanity, but I just kind of, so that's what we're trying to do right now. I just want to do, I'm supposed to be writing this little movie and that's kind of what I want to do. I was
from like, an original idea at least.
No, there's a few things, a couple of original ideas, a couple of IPs, you know, there's a few things that we have that are very real. That we're just trying to lock in. Yeah.
Nice. Zach, I'd love to know just as a storyteller, when you know it's time to, because there's always that expression that I've always heard that you never finish a movie. You just have to decide that it's time to walk away from it. So what is the difference between when you know that you're done with theatrical and it's, you know, I'll worry with, you know, the director's cut later. And then how do you know when it's time to let go of the director's cut? Like when do you look at the director's cut and go,
they pry that out of my hand. Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah. They pry it out. They just go like, okay, well the movie's coming out, so you can't make any more changes. You know,
are there any of your director's cuts that are oftentimes considered to be the final cut of that project? Are there any of your director's cuts that if you had more time, you'd go, you know what? I wouldn't mind going back and tweaking that.
We talked about Sucker Punches. I've never really done a real director's cut of Sucker Punch, but that was really just, there was a longer version of the movie that we just made shorter and then we just made it longer again, but it wasn't the actual like weirdo version, which exists, of course.
I love the weirdo version. I love Sucker. I got quoted for Sucker Punch. I love Sucker Punch.
He likes telling everybody he got quoted for Sucker Punch. It's true. He brings it up all the time.
I do. I really do.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to talk about Ed as a protagonist.
Yes.
Or as an antagonist, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he also gets the director's cut also benefits him, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yes, we see different shades of him in ways that I didn't think were possible. Can you talk a bit about we're into spoilers now at this point. You know, people have been able to see these cuts. This was in the theatrical cuts as well too. His resurrection sequence is one of the most visually astounding sequences at the beginning of part two. You know, about putting that together and also just turning Ed loose in this universe.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. Yeah, I had drawn like, you know, a bunch of crazy images of his resurrection and, you know, I just wanted you know, there's all that sort of like, you know, it has very sort of biblical iconology and all sorts of weirdness. But Ed was a real blessing, I think, in a lot of ways, because I had written this character and I thought, you know, of him as, you know, slightly theatrical, but also kind of weirdly, you know, dedicated to the Imperium and its like, it's, you know, the mother world and its mission. And he was very much like, you know, he's been off like away from home for too long, you know, obviously. And so sort of has forgotten the rule of law that he might be, if he was under stricter military sort of supervision, he might be a little less crazy, but he's been out for a while. So he's a little, he's got a little Kurtz on us. And so I think that, and Ed was really down with all of that, and not afraid, you know, and I think that was really quite fun. And the funny thing is like Toa, which is the opening of the first movie, we did that kind of late in the schedule, weirdly. And so, you know, he was kind of already into, he had gotten into sort of Noble as a character.
Right.
And so I think it was really actually beneficial that he kind of knew what he was doing.
Oh, that sequence is harrowing. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Now, there was a couple of cuts I had to make to that sequence to get it to the R rating from the,
I would assume,
from the NC-17, because it was NC-17 for quite a while. And then we had to really,
was it a few less whacks to the head?
Yeah, a few less whacks. A little less brains that he dug out, you know.
When you get the NC-17 version and you know you have to cut it down for R, do you keep the NC-17 version of yourself, like, or for yourself? Is there like a computer in your house where you have the NC-17?
Cool. That's cool, but no. I mean, yeah, it's somewhere, but no. I did have a conversation with Netflix about whether or not that was a possibility. And they were like, we really want it to be R. And I was like, all right, it's fair. I did say I would give you an R-rated cut, so.
Oh, you argued for the NC-17 version?
What?
You argued for the NC-17 version?
No, I asked Netflix if they were cool with the NC-17, okay. And they were like, no, we're not.
Zach, this year...
Because I had agreed. Debbie was like, you did agree that it would be R-rated. And I said,
Deal's a deal.
Yeah.
This year is the 20th anniversary of Dawn of the Dead. And obviously, like, you were a different filmmaker then. And I would imagine that you didn't have as much clout or creative freedom then as you do now. Sure. Would you make that movie any differently today, being the filmmaker now that has the freedom that you've earned over the last 20 years?
I don't know, you know, it's a very particular thing, you know, like it's hard to like put that. I mean, we're showing the cool thing is like, you know, we're showing at the Egyptian here in LA, we're doing a double feature of Dawn and Army.
Yes.
It's just a fun thing to see the difference. You know, I think that Army is the cool thing about Army is I think just visually it's, a little bit more competent movie, you know, like I knew what I was doing when I made Dawn, but I was pretty much like trying to figure it out. But I think Army is like, and also it's just like another level of violence, you know, it's like, it's like, I'm just better at that.
Zach, one question that a ton of people asked me to ask you when I mentioned we were going to talk today was physical copies of the Rebel Moon films. Obviously you'd have a ton of collectors who follow you, you know. Yeah. Working with streaming is an advantage, but do you think you'll ever get a chance to put these out in some sort of physical format?
I think you'd have to like lobby Criterion or something.
Okay.
And then like, cause I do believe, I'm not 100% sure of this, but I do believe that Netflix has some sort of respect for that.
Okay.
That channeling. So,
is that important to you? Is it important to you to have a physical copy?
I think it's lovely for the fans, you know, to have it. I have, 35 millimeter prints of all the movies. That's in my deal. That's the way I archive the movies because I don't trust, the digital archiving process. In 20 years, I don't even know what that's going to look like. Like some of these movies aren't going to make it, you know, through the new iterations.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they're updating everything, but I don't know. And I have a vault, you know, in Hollywood with prints of all the movies. So
now, like, you're doing this screening series of The Egyptian. Have you had conversations about maybe getting Rebel Moon into a theater in some, just even in a limited press? I know you've had opportunities to screen.
I appreciate it. It's cool, but I was just like, you know, I kind of made it for the streamer, and I kind of made it, shot it specifically, you know, and I didn't really have any aspirations for the movie to be a theatrical release. I mean, it's cool that there's interest around that, but mm-hmm. I just feel like, you know, it'll be on your TV in a minute.
Yeah, sure.
It's fine.
Yeah, you can just keep it on the loop.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan was recently talking about Watchmen and said something that I think all of us have said at some point, which is that it was just way ahead of its time. And I do think it's a masterpiece. I'm curious if you saw Nolan's comments about Watchmen and how you think that movie would have played if it had been dropped today in the middle of the Marvel wave that's happening.
Yeah, no, we've talked about that quite a bit. And when Chris and I were talking about he and I initially talked about doing Superman, he pointed at Watchmen as like the why he was asking, really the thing that made him think I could do it, the movie. Mm-hmm. Because I think his feeling was that I understood this superhero IP in kind of a very deconstructivist way, but also I could, if you can break the rules, you know, supposedly you don't have to, you know how not to break them too, if you if asked. And I think that is true to some extent. I think that the film, it would be interesting to see how it would play, but it's impossible to know. It's an incredible cast, by the way, one of the great casts I've worked with. You know, Billy Crudup is one of my favorite actors, you know, and Patrick, of course. It would be really, I love watching the movie whenever it's on. It's a very watchable movie.
Zach, how long have you been living with the character of Cora? How long have you been putting her story together?
Yeah, I've been putting her story together for, 20 years, 20, 30 years or something like that. But you know, in fits and starts, I wouldn't say I was like been working on it for 30 years. That's crazy. I've been working on her for a while. I think she's just an interesting, very, very, very attractive to my sort of mythological view of storytelling and sort of mythology in general. And she really fits the sort of Joseph Campbellian model.
And can I ask what element Sophia brought to her that maybe solidified her or maybe even pushed her further than you had thought possible?
Sophia's done an amazing job with her. Like, yeah, she really has realized her in an amazing way. Made her, I think her vulnerability is really the thing that Sophia brought in a really great way that makes her much more, I think, likable. That vulnerability is so on display throughout the film and really incredible to see. And she surprised me all the time with just, you know, doing things with Cora that I didn't want her to do, but that I didn't expect this sort of depth that she could bring to her. And I thought that was really refreshing and beautiful. And I very much encouraged, you know. Mm-hmm.
You know, Zach, when I'd imagine when George Lucas created Star Wars, he wasn't ever planning on anyone else sort of jumping into his sandbox and playing with his characters and creating new stories that he didn't think of. But are you open to the idea in 30 or 40 years of a young filmmaker who grew up watching these movies on Netflix come to you and says, hey, like, I really have this idea to do this with these characters? Or are you the kind of person that is too protective of it, or you'd let them play?
That'd be great. That'd be great. I love that.
Zach, is there still a video game aspect to this?
Yeah, there's a mobile game coming any minute. And then depending on if Netflix wanted to make a bigger game, the mobile game is pretty incredible. They've done an incredible job.
What can you tell us about it?
It's just cool. It has Kryptonians in it, and it's just like it's pretty complex mythology. And it's just it's they've really like taken everything. Well, this is a perfect example. They really took sort of all the mythology and really kind of it's like you know sort of when someone has this sort of piece of canon, and then you get a bunch of smart people to riff on it, and they. But without breaking it, it's always cool. It's like they did a good job of like you know, really fetishizing it. These little aspects, these little weird little throwaways that I put in the movie, and they made that into like a whole thing, you know. Which I think.
Zach, I know obviously that you know that for you the director's cut of any of your films is sort of the true version of your movies. But what is your favorite theatrical cut of any of your films?
My favorite theatrical. Oh, well, Superman,
Oh,
Man of Steel, obviously, because there's
yes.
no director's cut of Man of Steel, so
Sure,
yeah, that's so true.
that's a good answer. God, but that Man of Steel is a freaking masterpiece, man. That's that. And honestly, and I feel like this is saying a lot. One of Zimmer's best scores.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful.
That is
It's
easily one of
incredible.
Zimmer's best scores.
That's really incredible. I like that he plays it, you know, when he's doing his concerts,
His
you know.
concerts.
Well,
Have you
yeah.
had a chance to go to one of those?
I haven't, but he's coming to the Hollywood Bowl, so I think I may see him here.
Oh, man. No,
Because he and his he did the Twilight of the Gods.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's really amazing.
Is that coming out later this year?
Yeah, that's coming September. We're doing a, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but I'm doing a sneak peek on Friday, the Friday, like Thursday is Justice League at the Egyptian, and then the black and white version, and
Yes.
then Friday night is very limited. Over at Netflix, we're doing Twilight of the Gods first two episodes.
Okay.
And then Saturday is the director's cut. So,
Ah,
that should be a lot of fun if you're in Los Angeles. For the rest of us, we'll have to follow from back home. Zach, we'll get you out of here on this one. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, man. Really appreciate you always coming
it's my
by
honor. It's my
and getting a
honor.
chance to talk to you. But I know you're really great friends with Joe and Anthony Russo. You know, I've talked to them a lot over the years. Obviously, they
Yeah.
broke huge news this past weekend going back to Marvel. I just wanted to get your thoughts on them returning back to that huge sandbox.
I think that's great for them. They're amazing, and they've done really. I think they've done great work with those guys, and I'm sure they'll do something amazing. They're talented guys, and I think I think they'll do something cool. I think it's time to shake it up a little bit. Of
Awesome. Zach, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate it.
course.
Good seeing you. As always, we have to thank Zack Snyder for coming on the show. He's been on the show a number of times at this point, talking about Justice League and Army of the Dead. And I'm so happy to get him on to talk about these director's cuts of Rebel Moon. If you were intrigued at all by the initial cuts of the film, this sci-fi epic, which is, you know, based on Kurosawa, which of course Star Wars was also riffing on Kurosawa. And Zack talked about in our interview how this was at one point a pitch to Lucasfilm to maybe be made as a Star Wars film. And then Zach, I thought was really interesting when he was talking about the success of Deadpool and that going R-rated, how more mainstream IP type franchise stuff might be willing to open themselves up to R-rated interpretations. And could something like this fit in the Star Wars universe? I still think that everything that takes place in Rebel Moon is very Zack Snyder. I think it's his tone, it's his voice. It's edgy and it's aggressive in a way that Zack's movies have been, both in the violence and in the sexuality. And in the big ideas, it's a big, intelligent science fiction story, and one that only he could deliver in the package that it's in now, in the director's cut, in the sort of raw and unfiltered version that people are going to get a chance to see on Netflix. So I hope you enjoyed the interview. Make sure you go check out Rebel Moon now that it's available in the version that Zach wanted you guys to see on Netflix, available with your Netflix subscription. Keep it here on the Real Blend podcast. Hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, do all those things that you have to do on the YouTube channel, because later on this week, we're going to be back with a full episode. We have another returning guest coming back to the show. Director M. Night Shyamalan will be joining us. We'll be talking about his new film, Trap, that's coming into theaters. And on Friday's show, we should be able to do a spoiler-filled review of Deadpool and Wolverine and talk about a lot of the stuff that I got to see at San Diego Comic-Con. I will catch the boys up on a lot of the content that I got to check out while I was there and some of the stuff I've already reported on. Maybe you guys have been following along on Cinema Blend. It's been out there and available for you guys to play along with. So thank you for supporting Real Blend. We really appreciate it. Thank you for supporting Cinema Blend. Keep it right here for all your Real Blend needs, and we'll be back with a brand new episode very, very soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.